Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We have an exciting follow-up to a show we did in October, Fred, about the fountains of magma of the great deep. And we have a special guest coming on. But first, what an announcement we have.
A huge, huge, big announcement. This really is big.
Yeah.
Real Science Radio has released the video and Blu-ray version of Evidence Against the Big Bang.
I am so excited about this video, Fred.
Well, I just posted this to Facebook. I'm already getting some activity on it, some excitement. So
yeah.
I highly encourage people to get this video, buy it for Christmas as a Christmas gift. In fact, I think we've got Christmas packages for
it, right? Yeah, we do. And when we sell materials, our plot, an overview of the whole Bible, our materials are not cut-rate bargain deals. They're priced at a way that we believe they're very valuable. But if someone can't afford our materials because we care about the truth, we tell people for whatever you can afford. But also we have a 30-day money-back guarantee on everything. And we've always had these things for 25 years.
Yep.
So this video is $35 for the Blu-ray, the DVD, or I think it's $30 for the download. But if you'd like to give these for Christmas, there's Christmas pricing. And of course, there's 30-day money-back guarantee. But it's 4 copies for $100 or 10 copies for $200. And hey, your Christmas shopping could be done for 10 people.
That's right. You can buy 1 copy, 4, 10, whatever you want.
Yeah.
And again, if you need help with the video, just contact us and we'll do that because we really want to get this out.
That's right.
And share this thing on the social media. Let's really push this because I've seen the video. It's fantastic. It's very well produced.
It's so fun. And Fred, this will help keep us high up on the Google rankings. I mean, we're number one.
We're number one.
Out
right?
of a million.
Not for number
various,
one for what?
For evidence against the Big Bang, for Big Bang predictions, even for Big Bang evidence, we bounce between page 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And so that's pretty good for a creationist radio program.
That's right. And this will appeal to not just creationists, like-minded people. This will appeal to secular people.
Oh, yeah. Even atheists who believe the Big Bang is gospel. So if folks are interested, just go to our website, rsr.org. Click on the banner ad, Evidence Against the Big Bang, or click on the store, browse the science department, and it's right there. You can get 1 copy, a download, or 4 or 10 copies.
And this was in the works for a while, Bob. This is great that this is finally out. How long were you working on
this? Well, the research is about 4 or 5 years of research. And when we started to produce it until we released it in November, about 2 years. So it's a huge effort.
It's a huge effort. There were really big name scientists that reviewed this, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that's all in the video.
Yeah.
And
don't want to give too much of it away.
No.
But it's fantastic.
And if somebody wants to know the information in here, they could just go to rsr.org/BB.
That's easy.
For Big Bang.
Yep.
BB.
rsr.org/BB.
Now, let's say they go to rsr.org/BN. That stands for Brian Nickel. Remember Brian?
Yeah.
Brian is the expert on the global flood, an advocate of Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, which is the fountains of the great deep. That's how the earth got flooded when they broke forth. And he is able to talk us through some of the technical details, the physics and science behind it, because he's created a video tutorial of the hydroplate theory. We've had him on the show. And so what an honor that right now, joining us back on Real Science Radio is Brian Nickel. Brian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Well, it's a thrill to have you on. Brian, you are a mechanical engineer in the aerospace defense industry. When you first learned about Dr. Walt Brown's theory, how long ago was it, and did you immediately accept it?
It was in about 1999 that I first became aware of Brown's theory, and I became immediately intrigued But it took a while for me to accept everything that it said. But as I would go through and review his footnotes that are extensive and compare the theories with other theories, it became more and more clear that Walt had a unique take and seemed to be on the right path as far as I can tell.
Wow. Yeah, it seems to hold muster. I don't have the technical engineering background that you and so many of Walt Brown's supporters and advocates have, but I have done what I can with my skills. Like, I'll run down the footnotes and the references. I have checked hundreds of Walt's scientific references at the back of his book. And, you know, maybe every 60 or 80, I'll find something that could be corrected or clarified. So reliable, and that's what I really love about Walt's work. But we've asked you to come on, Brian, so we could talk through a show we did back in October that has generated some amount of controversy, and it's what we called the Fountains of Magma of the Great Deep, when we looked at Answers in Genesis, and we love those guys. They've led thousands of people to the Lord. They convince people evolution is not true. God created us in the recent past. But we did a show on an exhibit they have at their creation museum that supports plate tectonics. It's the creation version, catastrophic plate tectonics. Fred, what did that animation show that blew us away?
Well, it was shocking. It shows magma is really the fountains of the great deep. You know, I was pretty much a layman on this. I still am. But fountains of great deep, to me, that's always meant water. It can't be magma.
Yeah.
So anyways, there's an animation that's shown at the Creation Museum, which is a great place to go, by the way.
Oh, we love it.
We love it. And now they got the Great Ark Encounter. Can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
But they've got this animation, and it shows magma instead of water coming up from the core, near the core, right, up to the surface, producing jet streams of water up into the atmosphere to rain, torrential rain for 40 days and 40 nights.
Yeah, and that whole model, we question the physics of the whole thing and the biblical justification for it, because the fountains of the great deep are not magma. It's not volcanic. The fountains were water.
Yes.
And so, Brian, this is where you come in. We have released this video. It's a 10-minute YouTube video called Fountains of Magma of the Great Deep.
And we show this animation via a cell phone video of the actual animation at the Creation Museum.
Yes. And so could you talk through with us the physics of it? The claim, for example, that from the liquid outer core, the molten outer core, that magma would rise up through the mantle, which is like 1,800 miles thick, and then break through the crust, and then push up the water of the ocean to flood the continents. That's how, because they don't add water. These other flood models, for the most part, they don't add water. They want to flood the earth with the water that was already on the surface. So, Brian, let's talk through this step by step.
Sure. Yeah, I've viewed the video as well. And what it shows is initially a plume developing at the outer core boundary between the liquid outer core and the underside of the mantle, and then it rises up through the mantle for 1,800 miles, and then spills out onto the ocean floor, and then you see steam rise up. And so beginning down at the base there where that plume rose.
Okay, Brian, to restate that myself, a plume, and that's P-L-U-M-E. It's a bunch of rock that as it's rising up through the mantle, ostensibly, sort of looks like a mushroom with a stalk and then a rounded top, a plume of magma rising up. And so we're going to talk about the physics of that.
Yeah. And you mentioned all these references that Walt Brown has, you know, several of them here. For example, from a scientific journal, deep narrow thermal plumes are unnecessary. And I really like this one. The question of where the magma comes from and how it is generated are the most speculative in all of volcanology. And this is from a scientist, a secular scientist.
Yeah. In fact, Walt has a lot of references like this saying that this whole scenario, and these are secular scientific sources, the scenario is hard to justify based on the physics. So, Brian, explain that again to us.
Yes, well, I'll get to the plume rising in a minute, but one problem with a plume even forming is that the core material, the liquid core magma material in the outer core, is so conductive that it will dissipate heat buildup of any kind so rapidly that a hot plume, a hot spot that would tend to maybe say want to rise, people want to think of it that way, it would dissipate heat so quickly throughout the rest of the outer core through conduction that it would basically cool down before it could ever rise. So even forming a hot spot for a plume is not possible.
So in other words, the temperature of the outer core would be rather regular, sort of like a homeostasis there, because wherever it started to get hotter, that temperature is just going to dissipate throughout the outer core.
Exactly.
So just to get the plume is impossible. So this is not a good start.
From what we know about physics and the structure of the inner Earth.
Exactly. Yeah, the stuff around it. So again, from the get-go, this model that we're, this video, this animation, it can't work from the very start, but we're going to assume that maybe it can, you know, so that we can get to the next part that isn't true either, right?
Yeah. All right.
We're going to go from one impossibility to another.
So for the sake of argument, let's say that a plume did form, even though Walt and Brian, you're referencing scientists who question the ability of such a pool of magma to gather together at some super hot temperature.
Yeah. It's called the most speculative in all of volcanology by a secular scientist.
Okay, right.
Right, and in the latter part of your video that you released, I was pleased to see that you had included Kevin Lee's experiment that he did live of basically that scenario where he highlights that there exists in the mantle and even in what's called the crossover depth.
Mm.
For any compressible fluid in amidst another fluid, there is a crossover depth for that if it's compressible, and so there's a certain level that you'll get to where, let's say you had a milk jug of just full of air, and that, of course, the milk jug isn't strong enough to resist external forces. So you pull that milk jug down to a certain level in water and let go of it, and the pressure from the water surrounding it will crush the milk jug, make the air density more dense. And if you were to let go of it at a certain level, it would just sit there. It wouldn't rocket up to the top of the surface like it would if you only held that milk jug, you know, a few feet under the water. If you go down to a certain depth, it'll just stay put, and that's called the crossover depth because the density of the crushed milk jug air is the same density as the water in it.
And what if you go below that?
Yeah, what if you go below that crossover depth?
If you go below that crossover depth, the pressure from the water now will continue to crush that air in the milk jug to a denser state, and it will be denser now than the water, and it will continue to fall rapidly. It will actually sink.
It'll sink instead of rise.
Exactly. Yeah. And so with this plume, this hopeful plume, it is starting out way under the crossover depth of the mantle. The crossover depth of the mantle is, I think it's only about 200 miles below the surface of the Earth. And yet a plume starting out at the mantle core boundary is 1,800 miles under the surface. It has no hope of ever rising because that plume is almost twice as dense as the material it's trying to rise through. And it's absolute physical impossibility for that to happen.
So if it was over the crossover depth, then it would rise. And as it rises rapidly. But the problem is this plume is far below the crossover depth.
Way below. So two things I want to mention. One is a Google search that we did for this. And two is this Kevin Lee, you mentioned, dear friend of Real Science Radio. Kevin is formerly with the Puget Sound Naval Shipyard's Nuclear Engineering Department. He's got a great background. He's a scuba diver. He understands this idea that pressure increases with depth. And so, you know how they say one experiment is worth 1,000 theories? And so the same is true with one scientific demonstration. So you see this tube of water he has, vertical, and this ball, you put it in the water and it just floats right back up, but you push it down far enough and then it just hovers there, and you push it a little further and it sinks quickly.
Yes. And where's this video people can see? It's a 10-minute video on YouTube.
Yes, go to rsr.org/magma.
Yeah, just 10 minutes worth. You should watch it.
Yeah, Real Science Radio, go to our website, /magma. It's just awesome. Brian, the point is that this happens also with rock in the earth. Is that true? Also with rock, there's a crossover depth where something is going to sink rather than float to the surface.
Right. I would specify that it has to be a compressible material. So like magma has been shown to be a compressible material at the pressures and depths that we're talking about.
Mm.
And so it will compress and become more dense. And so it's that relationship that will cause it to sink. If the mantle produces magma below the mantle's crossover depth, then that magma will sink.
Mm. So Walt Brown, in his book, In the Beginning, which we also sell at our store, Real Science Radio, and it makes for a fabulous Christmas present. I mean, it's a beautiful four-color, full-color science book. It's just gorgeous.
Very well done. Easy to read.
Oh.
You know, it's technical, but easy to read, too. The way he broke that book up.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The number one creation book, in my opinion, in my
yes.
humble opinion.
And I agree, too. And, Brian, the thing I love about Walt is he's not only a scientist, he's a teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he taught at the Air Force Academy. And in the Army, he had, a couple hundred PhDs working for him in the Army's leading scientific lab. So he's such a communicator, and he's broken up that book into bite-sized chunks, where when I would share it with our kids, you could take one section at a time. It might be half a page. It might be a page. It might be a sidebar. It might be a table or a figure with a caption. And you look at that, and then the next day you do something else. It's just so fun. But in Walt's book, he goes to the world's leading expert on the densities of what is beneath the surface of the earth, going right through the crust to the mantle and the outer core and the inner core. And so what I did, Brian, was I just went ahead and Googled density of the inner core. And so, of course, you go right to one of the world's leading universities, and they pull out the data the way Google does, and they show the density just above the outer core, and then the density of the outer core. In the outer core is magma, it's liquid, and it's about twice as dense as the mantle, the solid rock just above it. So if the melted rock is twice as dense, there's no way that gravity is going to enable it to float up through the mantle.
That is correct. From there, let's just say that we go ahead and give them the benefit of the doubt and we allow that to go ahead and rise. There is a huge heat transfer problem next.
Okay, so we've got two impossibilities. Now we're going to work on a third.
Okay, the two impossibilities are you're not going to get all that heat gathered because of the high conductivity of the outer core.
So you'll never get the plume.
The second one is it's not going to rise up because it's twice as dense right at the boundary.
And below
there.
The crossover depth.
Right, and it's way below the crossover depth. So now there's a third problem.
The third problem is that as that plume tries to rise through that mantle material that is not as hot as the plume, heat is going to transfer out of that plume into the colder mantle material. And it has an 1,800-mile journey through colder rock. And remember, it's a liquid that's trying to rise through a solid. And yet if that liquid gets cool enough, then it is going to refreeze and you'll have a plug that will prevent any more of that core material from rising.
Okay, so let's talk this through. And maybe it would help to describe one of Walt Brown's friends from years ago, Bob Dietz. You guys remember the name Bob Dietz?
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the fathers of plate tectonics.
Yep.
He played a major role there at Arizona State, and that's where Walt is located in Phoenix. Brian, could I give you a quiz? Do you remember what term Bob Dietz coined?
I think seafloor spreading was.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Correct.
Plate tectonics is all about seafloor spreading and subduction. And so Dietz had a good friend whose name is Troy Pugh, P-E-W-E, and Troy was a member of the National Academy of Sciences. Big, big deal. And Walt Brown, good friend of Bob Dietz, met Troy Pugh, who was a geology professor. And the question was asked, How large would a plume of magma have to be to melt its way from the core to the surface? How big? Because as it's coming up through the cooler mantle, like you just said, Brian, it's going to transfer its heat. Thermodynamics, those equations are really well known. You're going to have heat transfer from the magma to the colder solid rock around it. So how big was the initial plume? Did it have to be to melt its way to the surface? Do either of you guys remember the answer? Brian, do you recall?
I remember reading about this, and I remember the calculation came out that the diameter of the plume was going to have to be larger than the diameter of Earth.
That's exactly right.
That's a big plume.
Yeah, that's a big plume.
So you need something bigger than Earth.
Big plume.
To solve this third problem of getting the magma to the surface and taking into account, you know, the thermodynamics, the heat loss and all that.
Okay. So the first problem is the conductivity of the outer core. You can't gather all that heat. It's just going to dissipate. Second problem is the crossover depth. It's not going to rise up. It's denser. It's going to sink. And the third problem is the heat transfer problem. All the heat of your plume is going to dissipate, and your magma is going to freeze. It's going to solidify. Is that right, Brian?
And once it does that, then you have a plug in the opening, and no material from below can get up.
Right. So those are three big problems. And these problems are shared not only by those who support catastrophic plate tectonics, but the reason that Walt has all these great scientific references is because these things challenge plate tectonics also. So, Brian, are there any other problems, or have they run out of problems?
Well, another problem I saw was that even if that hot plume was able to reach the surface of the Earth, basically the ocean floor as it's depicted, there's no compression chamber or anything in there that would pressurize the ocean water in a way that it could then be directed anywhere. And so what they show in the animation is that the ocean surface gets hot right underneath an area where the plume rises and touches. And then they just show that local area of ocean flashing to a steam jet and shooting it high up into the atmosphere. But there's no compression chamber. There's no way that it's hitting open water. So those molecules are free to expand, but they can expand in any direction. And there's no walls or any structure to bound that chamber.
Absolutely no reason for it to go straight up like they have in the animation.
Straight up
into the atmosphere
and turn
and produce torrential rain.
Into supersonic jets into the upper atmosphere, which we can deduce from the evidence on the Earth that there was torrential rain falling from the upper atmosphere down onto the Earth, all over the Earth. And so their idea that you got magma coming up at the base of the ocean, and that translates to supersonic jets shooting up into the atmosphere. We made a claim, Fred, back in October on the air, that we don't believe they could show that with a computer simulation because it's just not going to happen. The heat of the magma is going to dissipate throughout the ocean water. Brian, could you describe that a bit more for us?
Yeah, it'd be like if you heated a local area of your swimming pool right in the middle to several thousand degrees, you might get the whole swimming pool to boil, but because all the water in that swimming pool is free to move and conduct and convect wherever it wants to in that liquid, it's going to mix, and you're not going to get a concentrated jet stream out of doing that.
Out of the top of the... So that, for example, you might, if you had enough magma, you'd need a lot of magma. Now, there was a lot of magma. We got basalt layers, flood basalts, especially in the Pacific. A lot of magma spilled out on the Earth during the global flood. There's no question about that. But you could get possibly some bubbles forming on the top of the ocean.
You could do that. I mean, we see that happen in Kilauea, the shallow areas where hot magma spills out onto the ocean floor.
Yeah.
And certainly we don't have steam jets coming out of the water.
No, when there's magma, lava flows around the Hawaiian Islands, right, you could get some, obviously, boiling bubbles on the top because it's boiling. To get the entire ocean so that you have this roiling maelstrom of boiling water, if that were to happen, first it would kill all the fish, but you wouldn't create supersonic jets to the upper atmosphere. You wouldn't get that.
No, you know, I do not see any way that that happens in the scenario that I saw on that clip.
So that's like a fourth problem.
Yeah, a just-so story. So maybe the audience wants to know, you know, these problems are really bad. Obviously, they refute, you know, the plate tectonics and
catastrophic
plate tectonics. So why is hydroplate theory better?
Well, let me ask you what chamber you might think of in the hydroplate theory scenario.
Well, the Bible gives so much affirmation to Walt Brown's theory, and we see that below the crust of the earth, below the firmament that God made on day two, he separated the water above the crust, the plates, from the water below the crust. About 60 miles beneath the surface of the earth, there was a subterranean chamber encircled the whole earth, and that was that pressurized chamber that you're asking about, Brian.
Yep, that's exactly right. So when we read in Genesis 7, verse 11, that all the fountains of the great deep burst open on the same day, then I see that as a much more plausible scenario that does have the required chamber for compression and a directed nozzle through the crack. When the fountains burst, that huge 60-mile-thick layer of granite was torn open, and the water, that pressurized compression chamber, just naturally let that water come flying out at great velocity. And that's how you can direct a flow of water up into the atmosphere and even beyond the atmosphere. But this open ocean idea just does not have any of those features in it at all.
All right. So, Brian, these problems, we mentioned four of them. The fourth one about the magma turning into the rain for 40 days and 40 nights, that's a creation issue. That's a global flood issue. The secular plate tectonics theory, they don't concern themselves with that, of course. But I think they have the first problems, right? Because they want plumes to come up through the mantle. Could you tell us how that fits into their model?
Well, plumes are required to explain, they use those to explain some of the features of the earth. They try to anyway. The Hawaiian Islands, for example, are said to be from a plume.
The hot spots and all, right.
Yeah, and the large, I guess they call it a super volcano under the Yellowstone Park is said to have come from a super plume.
And then also the convection currents in the mantle, do they want plumes to get those things going or no? You know?
Yeah, that's another thing to support. Actually, the seafloor spreading idea that Bob Dietz coined that term is basically from a rising plume pushing up the seafloor in those areas.
So they have to get their magma from somewhere.
Yeah.
And since the outer core is molten, they figure, well, that's where the magma's coming from, except the physics don't permit their theory to work, even from the get-go.
Yeah, I think the more recent research and experiments on the properties of magma and the fact that it is compressible and therefore it has a crossover depth, and the fact that the crossover depth is really so shallow in comparison to the overall thickness of the mantle, only 200 miles versus 1,800 miles thick, it really is a real conundrum for anybody wanting to tout plume rise through the mantle.
And the fact that the mantle is solid rock, those convection currents don't exist anyway.
Right. Convection currents are a real problem, I think, for the mantle, because the mantle being solid, convection currents can happen in a pot of boiling water, which is usually the scenario posited for those who are proponents of plate tectonics and mantle convection. They'll say, well, think of a pot boiling and you see it rolling and you see the water rolling in boiling pot. But what they fail to point out and emphasize, which they really should, is that that pot is a liquid, liquid. It's liquid water and it has very low viscosity. And in the mantle, that rock is hot and it's a solid. It's not in a liquid state and its viscosity is tremendous, if you could even really call it viscosity.
So, okay, so The problems we are learning about apply to both plate tectonics and catastrophic plate tectonics.
Absolutely.
So CPT is known for miracles of convenience. In fact, our video, Fred, you remember our global flood video,
yeah,
in the hydroplate theory, we lay out the miracles that John Baumgartner and the team at AIG and elsewhere that supports catastrophic plate tectonics, they claim miracle after miracle after miracle after miracle to explain how CPT would work. And we argue that that's unacceptable. Those are miracles of convenience not indicated in the Bible. You just can't call on a miracle anytime your scientific model doesn't work.
Well, refresh me on one of the miracles. Isn't it a planet that goes around or a,
well,
or a
that's,
moon? Or
that's, yeah, that was to get all the erosion that we need to have all the sedimentary rock on the Earth. But others, like God changed the temperature of the perimeter of the supercontinent, dropping it by like 400 degrees so that the rock would become denser and sink. And that's
right.
Just the miracle.
Yeah, I remember Baumgartner's video shows that, it starts out with an initial condition of very cold temperature at the edge, but there's no physical cause given for that aside from just the state. Well, if you assume that the temperature is super, super cold, then it'll be denser, and therefore he says that it'll sink. But I just don't see even a good reason for calling out for that cause. When there's nothing in the Bible to indicate that God did that. And I'm always a little hesitant whenever anybody starts saying that, well, obviously God just did a miracle here to support this theory. At that point, you're somewhat speaking for God. Mm. And I'm not in any way ready to do that.
Well, yeah. And so they could continue on the path that they had taken for really like 20 years, saying God did this miracle. He did this miracle. He did this miracle to remove all the heat of plate tectonics and all that stuff, and he did this miracle. So they could have said God did a miracle and made the magma, but they don't want to do that. They got too many miracles, so they did the same thing as plate tectonics. They said, oh, look, there's a bunch of magma down there. Well, the reason it's down there is because it's so dense.
Because it's sunk.
That's why we have this beautiful boundary between the outer core and the mantle rock, because it's dense. So they don't want to say there's a miracle and God made the magma. So they say, well, it must have come from there. And then they don't want to say God did a miracle and made the magma rise up. And then they have the problem with the crossover depth. And then they don't want to say God did a miracle and made the supersonic jets. So they want physics to do it, but they're not physicists and they don't have a strong background in physics. That's one problem with geology. Geologists are weak in physics and basic forces, and energy budgets. Would you say that's a fair statement, Brian?
Well, I mean, I guess from what I've read of a lot of the claims of geology, it appears that there is the lack of specificness as to their causes, usually very vague terms like subduction or uplift. Things like that are used to define forces, and yet the forces are never quantified, and
yeah,
there's never any logical build-up to what the cause is. And I think for me, that was one of the most refreshing things about hydroplate theory, was there was a very logical, physics-based, step-by-step build-up event. And for myself, as an engineer, that's kind of our starting framework for everything, is we have to build up a logical series of events to explain or to design. And so when we don't see that, our eyes sort of glaze over as far as what's being said.
And there's a good number of biblical references that support this too.
Oh, yeah.
Surprising number that people be surprised to see.
Yeah. In fact, if folks go to our website, rsr.org/flood, they could click on a link where we show all the biblical references describing the flood. And then we have this table, and you can put a green check mark if it supports the vapor canopy theory or catastrophic plate tectonics or the hydroplate theory or, you know, two or three of them. And that chart blows people away because the Bible specifically affirms so many aspects of the hydroplate theory and not these other, not the impact model, not comets or meteoroids or not CPT, not the vapor canopy theory, but overwhelmingly it supports the fountains of the great deep, that the water came from under the crust. Let me ask you guys, do you think this is an oversimplification, or is this true, that proponents of catastrophic plate tectonics have a hard time answering two questions? Where did the water come from, and where did the water go? Brian, what do you think? Could they easily answer those questions?
I think that they don't easily answer those questions, and I think that actually this animation points to the fact that they are struggling to come up with the explanation of where the water came from and where did the water go. And yet, one of the first things I recognized right away in 18 years ago was that Walt had those two questions answered within the first hour of my reading his book.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So, Bob, wasn't there at a recent RMCF YoungEarth.org meeting?
Yeah.
There was a person who supports CPT. The presenter supported CPT.
Yeah, and he was in Genesis model of the flood.
And he was asked, where does the water go to?
Yes, Fred, after his great presentation, there was an elderly gentleman, totally supportive, really excited, and he came up to the microphone and he said, well, where did the water go to? And I was so interested because I knew that CPT can't answer that question. And so this guy that we love, we're not giving his name, he's just a wonderful creationist. And he struggled for 3-4 minutes to answer. And Brian, the closest thing to an answer was he said that the sedimentary rocks on the continents, they hold a lot of water. Well, that's true, but they were water saturated during the flood.
Right.
During the flood, those sediments were saturated, filled with water. All that water can't go into the water.
Right.
So I don't think they could answer where the water came from or where the water went. And the hydroplate theory instantly, as a fundamental aspect of its main claim, answers those directly.
Right, right. The Walt's first assumption explains where the water came from, and that's backed up by biblical scripture references to the earth being created over water and basically describing essentially a subterranean water chamber, just like is insinuated in Genesis 7 verse 11 when it says all the fountains of the great deep burst open.
Right.
And then within just a few minutes of starting to review my videos, I explain where all the water went, and you can go to any beach and view the floodwaters.
They went into the ocean.
In the world.
They went into the ocean basins. That's where the floodwaters are.
I think that anybody's willing to just take their prejudices against hydroplate theory and whatever baggage they carry as far as their understanding of how Earth formed and whatnot, and just take 2.5-3 hours to carefully watch through my videos where I try to take Walt's huge epic work and break it down visually simply so that it's easy to understand, and go through and look at that. And I think it explains a great deal of evidence and it aligns with scripture. And that was really what my goals were in producing that video.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you did all that effort, and perhaps you and I could do more shows on your video because it's just so fun to talk through. I'd like us to close with one last scientific reference that Walt included, and this is from a journal, a peer-reviewed science journal, Tectonophysics, from 1999, and it's an article, Flood Basalts and Large Igneous Provinces from Deep Mantle Plumes, Fact, Fiction, and Fallacy. And it states that all the evidence that has been used so far to support the plume model is equivocal at best, if indeed not contrary. And the author goes on to say the idea, the plume idea, is ad hoc, it's inadequate, it's self-defeating, and it should be abandoned. That's pretty strong, and that's just another example of the mainstream geology journals saying, hey, there's a big problem with mantle rising up. It's not going to happen.
And it directly affects CPT, which we've been saying also needs to be abandoned.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Abandon the plume model, abandon CPT. All right, Brian Nickel, any final comment?
I agree. It's a house of falling cards. You get lined up with the wrong theory with your theology, and your theology has to either change or your theory is going to have to follow with that. And unfortunately, with plate tectonics, it's an evolutionary-based theory, and unfortunately, it didn't have a lot of physics-based theory behind it. And I think as time goes on, we see as more and more evidence and understanding is uncovered, we see that the physics just doesn't support it.
Hmm. All right. Well, Brian Nickel, what an honor to have you up back on Real Science Radio. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for being on, Brian.
I'm honored to have been on, and I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, sure thing. That was really fun. So that was Brian Nickel. And again, we will link, we'll embed his video tutorial of the hydroplate theory, the global flood. But it's also easy to go right to his page on our site. Fred, do you remember the URL for Brian's page?
Yeah, BN. RSR.org/BN, Brian
right.
Nickel.
Brian Nickel. And you could spell it out, too, if you want to. RSR.org/Brian-Nickel, but N-I-C-K-E-L. But he's just such a neat guy and does a wonderful job explaining these scientific issues.
Yes, lots of good visuals, too.
So, again, our Big Bang video, Real Science Radio presents Evidence Against the Big Bang.
It's hot off the presses.
It really is. Brand new. We expect this will be our best-selling science video ever. And it's available on Blu-ray, which if you have a Blu-ray player or pretty much any kid's video system, video game,
it'll
play a Blu-ray.
Yep.
Or DVD.
Yep.
And usually those will play in your computers, your laptops, whatever. Or you could just download it and watch it right away today.
Yep.
Yeah. Really worth it. And you'll help us stay on the air. Because we don't have a big foundation behind us, Fred, do we? I haven't noticed.
Oh, TBA, no, nothing.
Nothing, right? No, it's me, Fred, you guys, and the Lord. And so we really need your help. And also, if you want to get these for Christmas presents, 4 for $100 or 10 for $200. And then you could hand them out. Hey, pretty easy to wrap a DVD Blu-ray case.
And it's a really well-illustrated case, too. I'm looking at it right now. This is awesome.
It's pretty. People would enjoy getting that for Christmas.
Who did this video?
We have a graphic artist who owns his own company, very successful, up in Vancouver, British Columbia. And he did, in fact, Brad, I'll use his first name, he did many of the graphics inside this video. It's just gorgeous to look at.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Really cool.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, Fred Williams. What an
honor.
Thanks,
Bob.
God bless you. And to those in the audience, again, our website, rsr.org. May God bless you.